So here we are at the latest episode of the People Will Talk podcast, sitting outside Cafe Alabanda with Maria. How are you, Maria?
I'm very well, thank you.
And special guest Jonathan Teuma, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Jonathan is joining us because he has published a book with us, with Ibernia Doriel, our publishing company in English. We're outside this cafe, this fine establishment, because this is the location of the launch. So we're very excited to get into this book, the launch, and it's just the enigma of who is Jonathan Teuma over the course of this interview. So I guess this is pertinent because this links to your book in some way. You are from Gibraltar, Jonathan. So what is it like coming from a place that straddles the English-speaking worlds and the Spanish-speaking world and all that controversy wrapped up in all of that?
Well, it's a bit like being the face of one of those circus mirrors. You know, being right in the middle of two cultures that kind of reflect each other, though not necessarily exactly as your kitchen or your bathroom mirror might, but you know, in kind of morphed and extended ways as a circus mirror does. And it's like being right there in the middle where you can look at both and see the kind of similarities and differences between these two great cultures, you know.
Because you've done, well, quite a few things. Like, obviously you're a writer, you're a poet. But I think you've written for a newspaper as well when you were in Gibraltar. Is that right?
I did, yes. I had a stint working for the Vox newspaper, not to be confused with with the Vox political party. So, a very long-running weekly newspaper. It's been active at the very least since the 60s in Gibraltar. I'm not sure if it's still going, maybe just an online edition nowadays. And yeah, I started there writing a history column, which was really cool, really. I got the opportunity as well to take it away, because Gibraltar, very often, the only history that's spoken of is the kind of military, colonial kind of history. And I took the opportunity to look at more kind of social and cultural, historical issues. And then with time, I went on to do a bit of reporting and interviewing for them on various issues such as the environment, politics, and so on.
You know, the Vox thing did come up once after one of our launches, and one of my friends said, "Oh, he's a wonderful poet, but is he in Vox or something?" Which is the right-wing political party in mainland Spain. But obviously, as you explained, that's a completely different thing. You mentioned Gibraltar, and you've obviously travelled widely as well. I know you've been to Latin America, you've been to Angola, correct? No?
Yeah.
So Gibraltar is such a very specific place, and a very small place as well. So having travelled, has your perspective changed on what Gibraltar is or could be after having travelled so widely?
Well, yeah, definitely. There's no way it couldn't, you know. Growing up there, especially as well, you know, I was born in the late 70s, so I grew up in the 80s when still there were some serious restrictions on movement across the border. And for a long while, you know, Gibraltar is the be-all and end-all of your life. You know, it's not like growing up in another country where you might visit relatives, you know, up north or down south. Or, you know, in Gibraltar, up north or down south is a question of a kilometer either way. You know, so there's, you know, when you move out of there, you live in big cities like London, Madrid, you travel around areas and you see, you know, the connection, the cultural connections that, you know, that are established and exist in vast expanse of land. You can't help but look back at Gibraltar and maybe think, well, maybe we're missing something because of our political situation in terms of, yeah, connection to the world around us sometimes.
I also know that you are somebody who's a very international person, citizen of the world, very outward-looking, which is very commendable. Is this something just that's personal, or is this something that comes from a place where you've seen two people fighting over a territory and it maybe turned you off the idea of claiming I'm from this particular place?
I'd say there's certainly something to that, no, to what you're saying. There's also, in my particular case, a lot of family influence. I mean, my grandfather was a trade unionist and very much an internationalist. He was a staunch defender of workers' rights, regardless of where they came from, in a territory where, you know, specifically because of our colonial background, where they came from mattered in terms of working conditions, in terms of wages, in terms of treatment, just even basic human treatment for very long. Gibraltar was segregated, you know, and even up until the 70s, toilets were segregated between locals, British and aliens who have happened to be Spanish or Moroccan. And my grandfather spent his life fighting against that, you know, and trying to bring those false and discriminatory divisions down. So that's definitely left an imprint in my view of the world.
And you had an interesting experience, I think, because you told me that when you were a kid, you used to carry the Union Jack through the town centre, and then when you went to England to study, you're kind of like, hey, I'm one of you guys, but the reaction maybe wasn't what you were expecting.
Well, yeah, this is something common to many Gibraltarians, you know, as many other colonial subjects. We are taught to believe that we are almost more British than the British. Everybody feels their nationality, and to this day, you know, everybody still does feel very passionately British. But then there's this irony that very often when we go to the UK, very often at best the reaction is one of ignorance. People don't know even where Gibraltar is, you know, and then no matter how much we can put on a bit of a London accent or whatever, you know, or a Northern accent, depending on family connections or where you live, you're still seen as foreign, you know, and you're still seen as either a Spaniard or somebody else. So it's a bit of a sometimes contentious situation.
Well, I think that's quite funny. I was shocked to hear about the whole segregation thing. I'd never heard of that. And I was wondering about who the other people were that were not the natives, who were, you know, the others. Like when you said maybe Spaniards, maybe Moroccans, I was like quite shocked. Obviously, from the Spanish point of view, I think nowadays it's a bit of a joke. It was recently with the whole thing of the football, there was a bit of a controversy there with some footballers saying that, you know, Gibraltar, Spanish, whatever. That people now say is a joke. But back then, like in the 70s, it was like a big thing, obviously linked to the dictatorship. But yeah, but then in the end, most people don't even know like what Gibraltar is. So it's kind of like a bit of a joke. So do you think the whole situation like has influenced your books? Obviously you've written several books. Is this something that, you know, is kind of like paramount to your stories, or?
Well, I wouldn't say paramount, but it is there, you know. It's a subject that's in a few of my poems. I actually wrote a reply to Morata, you know, Gibraltar Espanu. Because unfortunately, it is still a very sore subject back there. People in Gibraltar did get very offended. I find that sometimes it's better, you know, to deal with it again through humor, or, you know, because at the end of the day, it's not, you know, so people there have nothing to fear, and there's no sign that it ever will be, or at least not in any kind of near or mid future. So I find there's no need to get overly offended, but it's true that because of the situation being cooped up in such a small territory, the fact that whenever Gibraltar appears in Spanish news, it's always around this topic, people remain perhaps more sensitive to it than what they would otherwise be. It is definitely a subject within a lot of my poetry, you know, and particularly my previous book. This current one maybe not so much, but my previous book does deal with various topics in relation to language, politics, culture, and all this controversy, you know, with Spain and the UK.
You mentioned your most recent book, and I think it's curious because obviously I associate with you poetry slam. You are the poetry slam guy. This book is a series of haikus, which again, poetry slam is very international. Haikus are Japanese. This kind of reinforces what we've been talking about as well. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about this book. What motivated you to capture this dialect or this language of Gibraltar, which is influenced by both Spanish and English?
Well, I mean, this thing of taking, you know, an established poetic form and using it to kind of either establish or promulgate a new form of expression is an old trick that poets have played over the years, you know. I mean, particularly the main example that comes to mind is the sonnet, no, which was born in Sicily and then was exported all over Europe, and everyone from Shakespeare to Lope de Vega and many in between used it, you know, again to establish their budding languages and show how, you know, Castellano can also be poetic and how, you know, English can also be poetic. And so, aware of this, I thought, well, why not the haiku? Initially, I wasn't thinking of writing a book. I was just playing with the established form. It was a personal challenge for me as well, because I know, even though I'm aware that the haiku doesn't necessarily have to strictly remain within the 5-7-5 three-verse structure, I took it upon myself as a personal challenge as a poet, because my writing is very often three-verse, you know, and very often only constricted by my own kind of personal interior rhythm. So I thought it would be an interesting challenge to experiment, you know, with a fixed metric system, with a fixed formula, and introduce this kind of wilder element, which is Janito, and in a way it's kind of seen a bit of a resurgence. Janito has been falling in terms of speakers over the last 10-20 years, and I think maybe, I don't know if it's out of nostalgia or whatever, but now writers, a fair few writers around my age in their 40s, maybe some a few a bit older, some a bit younger, are starting to employ Janito for the first time in its written form. So I thought I'd join this kind of renaissance with this book.
Jonathan, Edna mentioned poetry slam, so you've been really involved with that here in Spain. And just for the benefit of our listeners, you know, we've got listeners all over the world, and some of them would be very familiar, but maybe in other countries it's not so well known. So can you tell us a little bit about what is poetry slam and how it started here in Spain, maybe?
So yeah, I'd be happy to. The poetry slam, at its most basic level, is a performance poetry competition where the audience decides which poet has delivered their work best, you know. It's a combination of the quality of the poem, the quality of the performance, and all of that. It's the idea behind it is, again, to encourage poets to present their poems in a manner that dignifies them, and, you know, not just badly read, you know, from the corner of some bar, you know. They give them the presence and the presence that they deserve, you know, in terms of you know, how they've been written and what they're trying to express. It's been going on. It started in the USA and expanded worldwide since the late 70s, I think early 80s. And it arrived in Spain via, well, at least in Madrid, via the Goethe Institute, who started organizing poetry slams around early 2009. I think it independently also started in Mallorca and Barcelona around the same time, as an initiative of local poets, I think, who'd heard about it. And very shortly after, around mid-2010, Goethe passed it on to some of the poets here who were more assiduous at the slams. And it's galloped in growth ever since. I mean, up to now, like I say, those were the three first cities. But now there's over 30 cities in Spain that have a slam. There's another separate national association, there's Poetry Slam España and Poetry Slam Sur, who do their own thing in a similar vein and in a similar spirit. and it's really taken on. You know, people seem to like it, and there's a market for it. I personally have been involved through Poetry Slam Spain pretty much since its beginnings. Madrid, and also Spain for that matter. And helping new slams setting up, you know, telling them what it's about, when people have asked, at the end of the day, you don't need permission from anyone, you know, but people do come to more established scenes to ask what's going on and how to put it up, and we're happy to help. So now we're coming into 15th, 16th year of life in Spain. We've got connections with slams from all over Europe, some from the US. And also, probably worth mentioning, there's some interesting educational initiatives that have also stemmed from the Poetry Slam movement, such as the Proyecto Slam in Jaén and other workshop initiatives that have been taken to schools, to prisons, to cultural centers all over Spain. So it's really quite a big poetic movement, arguably the biggest poetic movement in the history of poetry, because as you said earlier, it spans from Chicago to Japan and practically everywhere in between, you know. So it is a big movement.
That's good. That's interesting, because I remember as well in one event where we were there and you perform a poem, and I remember a German person saying, yeah, of course, it's German. Poetry Slam is German. And he's not somebody who, well, he wasn't a writer or a reader of that, but he knew the poetic form. So yeah. It's obviously quite a popular form.
Definitely, it's massive in Germany. I mean, I say it's grown exponentially in Spain. It was already big in Germany when it arrived in Spain, and they draw crowds for certain national finals. They draw crowds of thousands, you know, which we still haven't reached that level of popularity here. We might never do, but you know, we do draw, depending on the city, anywhere from tens to hundreds of people. And again, it's an excuse to share poetry, to enjoy, you know, the world of the verse and learn from each other. I always say Poetry Slam is at its best when it's a laboratory, and when people are looking towards each other and towards what the audience feedback is, in order to learn and improve both poetically, literally, and in terms of performance and delivery.
Well, speaking of performance, Jonathan, could you maybe read two of your poems from the book, and that will close us out in the podcast?
Okay. I'll just say very quickly before that, again, I don't know if I said it earlier, but just in case, that the book kind of, each haiku tries to explain what a Janito turn of phrase or word is. I don't know how. Some of them are just nostalgic about my teens in Gibraltar or my youth in Gibraltar, but yeah. Also this one, why not? This is Janiku number 6, which kind of shows us the code-switching element. Excuse me, Pisha. Sorry, mi herma. Manners beyond lenguajes. So, yeah, that's one. You can see the code-switching element. And a very typical phrase in Gibraltar. Excuse me, Pisha, which is a Gaditano thing, you know. Or sorry, mi arma, which is a Sevillian mixed with English. And after that, why not Yaniku 22, which says, Banzai! Y Banzai! In Ingles and in Spanish, se dicen igual. I said the same.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. That was absolutely wonderful. Real pleasure having you with us, rather than the other way around.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, for all the work that's gone into this. It's been a great project and experience, and I look forward to more.
Thank you, Jonathan.